Hello and welcome to Did I Save Podcast. It's a podcast where we talk about the way games change and the way games change us. In today's episode, I want to talk about art direction, unique art styles to video games.
Unique aesthetic.
Aesthetic. I want to go away from realism. So games like that have great graphics and look beautiful, but games like God of War...
Hellblade is not going to be on here.
Yeah, like these games look great and they're aesthetically pleasing, but I want to talk about games that shy away from realism.
We want uniqueness.
Yeah, uniqueness.
We're here to give people participation trophies.
Yeah. And more importantly, I don't want to go first.
Okay. Well, you're the host, so you get to pick who goes first.
Exactly. We usually just go with the guy on the right.
Okay, that's fine.
And the guy on the right today right. is Taylan.
Whoop.
And I have Taylan here, and then I've got a guy in front of me, and he's going to go after Taylan. And
his name is the smoothest intro this we've ever done.
Yeah.
You can tell Ryan's growing every episode.
This is Jared.
Right. I think he's really focused on volume this episode.
I have to apologize to the audience for previous episodes.
You should project.
Where
if you get that close, it's going to be me editing out.
No, I love it.
I have to find a difficult balance of my volume and then also not breathing into the mic.
Yeah, you live a cursed life.
It's tough.
It's tough being
me. Yeah.
No one knows.
But everyone can relate.
No one's even tried.
Yeah.
Is this enough?
I'm a notorious mumbler.
No. So, Taylan,
yes.
Can you give us a game that has good art in the game?
Hit me. Impress me.
Yeah. Impress you.
Yeah.
Paper Mario.
Paper Mario! That's actually a good choice.
Yeah.
So, it takes Mario, which is already a popular game.
Yeah.
And puts a spin on it.
Like it.
Totally aesthetically changes it. Keeps the same characters, but it's very recognizable as a Mario game, of course.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, as you can probably tell by the name.
Yeah.
It's got this really cool, like, paper mache style where everything looks like a diorama that's been cut out of paper and then, like, layered, which I think is really interesting. But I really like the way that they build on the visual style in the mechanics of the game, because there's a lot of like puzzle solving and stuff like that that all revolves around playing with perspective and like the depth of the different elements and stuff like that. It's super interesting.
Yeah, really well done. It's colorful but not overbearing. It's just, it's very pleasing to
I
the
think
eyes
it's just as colorful as any other Mario game.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Nintendo always nails visual design, I think, in different ways. But this is like, everything's very clearly delineated. Like, you're never like, wait, what is what here? Like, what's happening in this scene? It's always very well structured in that sense.
Yeah.
Not quite the right word I'm looking for, but it never gets confusing or like muddied when you're looking at all these different elements the way you might expect it would.
Yeah.
That's how much have you played of this game?
I've played a few. I've played on the Wii. I played the color or the it's not called like colors. I can't remember. But there's one on the Wii that I really liked that plays a lot with perspective, but I just like the art style. And I played Origami King, which looks amazing. And I'm excited to check out Thousand Year Door because I've never played it.
Yeah, the HD remake just came out and it looks very good.
Yeah. So, and I'm excited to check that out.
Yeah.
But, so what's the gameplay like in this Paper Mario game?
What do you do in this game?
Yeah, it is an RPG.
You like build, do you fold paper? You just
you
do origami?
Lots of in our Origami King specifically, you do. Yeah. But
yeah, how many games are in the a Paper Mario series now?
A ton.
Quite like a few.
At least 10, maybe? Yeah.
I think earlier, like, Thousand Year Door is what I think of when I think of Paper Mario, because I think that's, like, the peak of the visual style and the gameplay combined. it's like a turn-based RPG where you're leveling up and everything. But the cool thing, I think, is like in the combat, there, like when you do an attack, there's a button prompt like mini game within the combat where if you hit it at just the right time, you'll do bonus damage. Mm-hmm. Or if you are defending, you'll negate damage. So it keeps you engaged, even though it's turn-based, in a much more like frenetic kind of way, which I like.
I have never played them, so I'm not exactly sure if each Paper Mario game in the series has like a similar combat or if it's just a similar art
they
direction.
They kind of moved away from Thousand Year Door with like Origami King and stuff like that. I never played Origami King because it kind of got like middling scores for the gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Pretty accurate though.
Okay, great.
You get like teammates, but they don't actually help you do anything. So it's just kind of annoying. It's like, why do I gather all these teammates if they don't?
What
do
a fun
anything?
Idea!
But it's like a Final Fantasy style RPG, right? Where it's like
Thousand Year Door is, yeah.
But Paper Mario, the original, what's the gameplay like on that
one? I don't know.
It's like
the one on the Wii is actually like an action platformer.
Yeah. Okay. And what's that one called?
I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
Super Mario World. What you're thinking of. Oh, okay. It's an action platformer.
I think
platformer.
It may be called Super Paper Mario, actually.
Yeah,
is there a Super
is,
Paper
yeah.
Mario?
I think so, okay. Yeah.
There's,
I'm not sure exactly. I'll throw it up there.
I don't think it came to the States for a long time after it came out in Japan, but there's one called Super Mario RPG, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For that Nintendo. Nintendo. I'm not great with, like, that is right when I was getting into video games, so I don't know a ton about the old school stuff, but I think that's like the roots of the Mario RPGs.
There was a time of where there was a person who existed who was not Gamer Jared.
Yeah, I was a fetus.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So right when you were getting into games was about the time you were born.
My mom would put her belly right against the TV speaker when the video game commercials would come on.
Oh, okay.
There was applesauce, Jared.
Oh, he's kicking. He's kicking. He wants to hear about this new Mario RPG.
Milk and applesauce, Jared. That was about 2 months that Jared existed, and then video game.
I traded
Jared.
All of that stuff for coins for the arcade.
That's right. Good.
You want some milk? I was standing on a street corner outside Mr. Gaddy's. Just
that's not what I meant by milk and applesauce, Jared.
Well, milk and applesauce, Jared, is a very different version than milk and applesauce, Ryan.
Well, okay? That'll be the first art I do for merch is milk and applesauce, Jared.
All right.
I love it.
I'm honored, to be honest. Okay, well, we breezed through that one. Yeah. Is there anything else that really stands out to you about it that you just want people to know?
Do you prefer like the art direction in Paper Mario versus original? Or do you just like...
No, I just think that it's very aesthetically pleasing.
Okay.
Like, I like it. They do creative things with the paper mechanic.
Yeah, not only does...
But it's really interesting.
Jared and I were discussing before this, but the art direction in the game, they use that in the game.
Right.
Like, it's part of the design of the game's mechanics and features and things like
that. Rather than just being like, here's the style, but they don't do anything.
Which is creative. It takes a lot of planning.
Yeah. Right. Agreed.
There are a lot of games that look really cool or interesting, but it doesn't necessarily affect like the gameplay or the tone of the game or anything like that. Like sometimes it feels very mismatched.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nintendo of all people understand how to merge
the two,
the aesthetic with the gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
So good one to kick off with.
Yeah, I would say. For sure. Do you want to give us yours, Jared?
Is it me? Is it me?
It's not going to be me.
So mine, I'll just, while we're talking about Nintendo, mine is Splatoon.
Oh, okay.
I think like that game is such an incredible example of how to use aesthetic in your gameplay.
Uh-huh.
And when I thought about this category, I really tried to think like what games just wouldn't be the same without their aesthetic. Like there are a lot of games where it would still function exactly the same, even if it looked different.
Mm-hmm.
And Splatoon is like so built around like the ink mechanic of like trying to cover this battlefield with your team's colored ink. And then moving through that as like squids and the way that all that looks in motion is such a huge part of what makes that game fun to play. Like if it were anything else, I don't think it would be nearly as fun. I don't even remember the name of it now, but recently some other game came out that was like a competitor to Splatoon.
Foam Stars.
And
I actually haven't heard of that.
Also has like a cutesy aesthetic, but it's much more like...
It looks more like Fortnite.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, really? It's like a merging of like if anime did Fortnite, basically. And there, I think they basically just got as legally distinct as possible from Splatoon. Right, yeah. They weren't really trying to do their own aesthetic. But
here's
my homework, just
make sure you change it up.
Just make it look like you didn't copy me. Okay, foam, not ink.
They didn't go with splatting or anything like that. At least.
But it extends into like the fashion of that game. Like upgrading your character or modifying how your character works is about like what kind of guns you use, but also like fashion. Like you literally, the hub world is a little street that's supposed to look like a street in Tokyo or something like that, where you go into shops and buy new clothes that modify all your abilities. So it's really interesting how deeply they took the aesthetic into all the different components of that game. And I don't think it would be nearly as compelling to play if they hadn't worked so hard to like meld those two things together. I really like just watching that game, even.
Yeah. I have also never played Splatoon, and at this point there's three games in the series, right? So
yeah.
What all have you played?
I've played two. Well, I played a little bit of one, but I've mostly played two and three.
Okay. The third one I heard wasn't as well received as the second one.
I think a big part of it for me was just that, like, it didn't really feel necessary, which is kind of out of character for Nintendo. But they kind of just stopped supporting it for no other reason than they wanted to make a new one. And they Splatoon still do 2, tournaments and stuff.
Is Splatoon 2 on the Switch?
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe
and that's, I thought that's where most of my hours are, is in 2.
Okay.
And they used to do fun little challenges like mustard versus ketchup, and you pick which your favorite is, and then there's like a game-wide tournament, so like you fight for your choice along with tons of other people, and then you just see who wins mustard or ketchup.
Okay,
like fun little
stuff
like that to make the multiplayer more compelling. You do have like a leveling mechanic and stuff like that as well, that makes it really fun to play. The guns all behave very differently, and that's a big part of it, is like seeing how the different guns cover different areas or, or your ultimate abilities and stuff like that is like very satisfying visually, like to see all these big explosions of ink everywhere and like covering back and forth, that pushback of like seeing the ink overlay. And you can, if you haven't played Splatoon, you can jump into the ink and travel through it as a squid really fast and then jump back out.
Yeah. You play as squid, like, humanoid characters.
Yeah, they're anthropomorphized.
Yeah, squids. You have like water guns essentially that squirt ink, correct? And
yeah,
you also
they
have,
all look like squirt guns. Yeah,
and in Smash Brothers you have like a paint roller. Is that?
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Is it just like, of course, it's really heavy, and, and you have to like reload your ink basically. So you'll like roll it until it's thinning out, and then you will.
And you can the ink you lay down is like your color. There's a bunch of different vibrant colors of ink to choose from depending on your team, correct?
It's assigned to you.
Okay.
So whatever, like, it's usually like purple and yellow or pink and blue or whatever, pink and purple, like just colors that contrast well for colorblind people, basically. So, but you can't travel through the enemy's ink.
You can only travel through your own. Yeah.
Only through your own. So that's kind of the push back and forth, is like you want to create a route for your teammates to travel really quickly back kind of into the enemy territory and start covering that. But if they cut off that route just by covering it with ink, that's kind of where the struggle starts. So that back and forth is really cool to see in action, because it looks very messy and fun and big and colorful and bombastic.
Yeah. I could just appreciate Nintendo's creativity. We're like, we're going to make a shooter. Okay. And then
you guys want to make a shooter?
And then this is what they
It's mean. A multiplayer shooter. You're like a multiplayer shooter? What does that look like? Well, I'm so glad
little
you
squid
asked.
People. Yeah.
So they're squid people, but they love fashion. Like, and there's two pop stars. And like,
you're right.
And they got six shoes, man.
Yeah. And it works.
And they do have six shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that game's
That is
awesome.
A great choice, though. That's,
My OCD would get to me. I'd be like, hold on, guys. I'll be right there to help you with the objective. I have to finish covering this wall.
Well, see, you would be very useful entirely. Because the big thing is, like, obviously there are a lot of kids playing this game. But there's such a deficiency in understanding strategy in this game, where like no one covers their own base. They just immediately, because they just want to go shoot people. So they all just go straight for the middle of the map and start shooting it. And I'm like back here with my roller, just getting the walls, getting the little nooks and crannies.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the game, the only thing that matters is who covered the most percentage of area. So every little inch you get matters.
So what does shooting other players do? Does it actually...
It kills them so that they can't keep spraying.
But they'll respawn.
Okay. Yeah, they'll just respawn. Yeah.
Okay. Does it have a lot of different game modes, or is it just pretty much like...
It has a couple, and it has like a story mode that I think is pretty good. There was some DLC for 2, but it was very hard, but it introduced like octopus people.
Oh, really?
And it was much more focused on like puzzle solving kind of stuff.
I didn't know it had a campaign.
Yeah, it's campaign is pretty generous, I would say. But it does have a single player component that is fun, especially if you like puzzle solving stuff.
I do.
You might be into it. And 2 is probably relatively cheap. Well, no, Nintendo games never get cheap.
Yeah.
No.
Never mind. That's one reason why I have it. Just buy 3, I guess.
They're like the biggest sale, and it's like 10% off a 7-year-old game. It's like, cool, thanks, man.
Yeah.
They do hold their value, though.
It is funny. I get emails from them. It's like, the game you like's on sale, and I look, like, games on my wish list, and it's like 5% off, and I'm like, you are not Steam, bro.
Yeah,
you are definitely not Steam.
Yeah.
That's not even tax. yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my first one.
I'm going to talk about a game called Psychonauts.
Oh, what a good choice.
That is a great choice.
I started playing it because I wanted to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I beat it when Psychonauts 2 was announced. I went and played Psychonauts 1, which I had never played. But I was just interested in it. Because it was a 3D platformer, which I love.
Indeed.
So I went back and played Psychonauts 1. I had a blast. Loved it. Then Psychonauts 2 came out. And then I found out there's the Rhombus of Ruin in between, which is a VR-exclusive game, which I have not got to play. But I did watch some stuff on it, and it looks pretty great. But it's pretty short.
Yeah, I think it's...
In terms of gameplay and like the story that they add to it. So there's not a lot that you miss if you just go from 1 to 2, and they summarize it when you play 2.
Okay.
Like real
quickly. I was going to say, I didn't play Rhombus of Ruin either, but I was not lost when I started playing 2.
Yeah.
And it had been a long time since I played 1. So. Yeah.
They summarize pretty much everything and then take you right into 2, and you can just jump off from there. But I started playing it, and I was like, you know what? I want Talon to do this in homie work because I don't think he's played it. Indeed. So
we'll be doing that.
So we do have a homework episode with Talon, because he has actually played it and beaten it, just out of nowhere. Just texted that he's beaten it.
Hey guys, I beat it. Didn't know he was playing it. Hey guys, it's done.
Yeah.
So what is mechanically? What are we looking
at? So it is like a 3D platformer. My hand in front of the camera again.
No, you're good.
So it is a 3D platformer with it. My brother Dawson compared it to the first Jak and Daxter game with the combat, which
that's probably fair,
which is pretty close. It has a few more things where you can like swap out your abilities, so it's a little more complex than Jak and Daxter's in that area. But you have a bunch of psychic abilities that you switch from. You have like pyrokinetics. You can make things levitate. You can jump into people's minds and view their perspectives.
Yeah, you're like a mental investigator. Is like the whole premise of this game is you go inside people's minds and you explore their memories to like help them deal with trauma or to solve a mystery or whatever.
So like in Mario 64 or the Mario games, you like jump into a painting, or like Banjo-Kazooie, you jump into a puzzle. This game, you jump into people's minds. So that's
a little door on their forehead.
Yeah, and so you are a psychonaut, or like a psychic adventurer that just learns and investigates the mind. And you get like, it's like Men in Black style, where it's like a secret government agency that has all
full
these...
Full of dysfunctional adults.
Yes. And the art direction is like the characters are almost like Picasso-esque.
Yeah, they're very disproportionate. Yeah,
that's a good way to put it.
It tries to reflect their mental state, essentially. Mm-hmm. And the game does a really good job at explaining, I don't know the terminology for sure, but just like mental illnesses.
Yeah, everybody has their own hang-up
that
you're having to deal with as you're exploring their mental
state.
And
it explains those in a way that's easy to understand, and it gives you it helps you understand people's perspective.
Yeah, it's empathetic. Yeah. It's not like making fun of them. It is very like...
Even the main character has things that he's struggling with. Yeah. He has like a phobia. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to give away too much about the game.
Right.
Especially since we'll be talking about it a little more in depth. So I don't want to talk about this one too much. But I just appreciate the art direction. The first game came out on the original Xbox, correct?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I picked it up on, I think it was on Game Pass when I picked it up.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So I just played it with that. And it, like, aesthetically, I thought the Psychonauts 2 game wouldn't look great because I was like, well, the graphics, the bad graphics are like why this game kind of looks good. Yeah.
I agree that they did an astounding job of updating ugly graphics for high resolution.
Yes. Yes. Psychonauts 2 came out. I was like, oh no, this looks
great. It almost looks like it's been molded out of clay now. Yes. Like it's not exactly like that, but it really has like that similar vibe of like you were saying, just very like Picasso-esque, whether or not you're in someone's mind. It's like, like the main character's head is just like so obviously way too big for his body.
Right.
Stuff like that. But like, I think both of those games and Double Fine games,
it is a Double Fine game.
They're always like brimming. If nothing else, like they're not all as good as the Psychonauts games, but they're all just overflowing with charm.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're all of them.
Really good writing. And Psychonauts is no exception. Like, it has really good characters and writing and clever, witty things. You'll just hear people talking in the background and they'll just listen and you'll hear funny things. Yeah.
And
yeah, the conversations that you overhear are, I forgot about that, but some of them are genuinely very
and,
funny.
And when you jump into people, you can jump into people's minds and you go into those worlds, but you can also jump into people's minds just to see their perspective and you'll see yourself through their eyeballs. Mm-hmm. So you see how they view you. Which is always interesting.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. It's so funny. Is there like an animal you can see yourself?
Yeah, there's a rat, and he sees you as a big rat once you give him cheese or something like that.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Yeah,
it's very clever.
Those games do what they do very well.
A lot of adults see you as like an annoying kid. Yeah, like a hyper kid. Yeah, there's several that take a little more like thinking. Like one guy just sees
bacon
everywhere. And then he sees you as a hyper kid covered in bacon grease. Like, so.
But why?
And if you look into a lot of the adults at the agency, the Psychonauts agency, see you as like a little agent. Mm-hmm. So you're like, look like a little Men in Black kind of guy.
Yeah, like a suit on.
Yeah.
It's
very creative. Every level, especially in the second one, like the levels are super fun to explore. And it's got the hub world too. Where you can adventure around the Psychonauts like agency building, and there's lots of secrets to discover, lots of collectibles and things to do.
Yeah, and the collectibles are a huge part of the aesthetic for me because they do such a good job. Like when you're in someone's mind, you'll find tags that go with luggage, and when you pair them, when you find both parts, they do like a little mini cutscene where it's like two people that are in love with each other, see each other after a long time. They both like run to each other and it's like you're basically helping them with their mental baggage, which is really, really funny.
It's
very, all of it revolves around this theme of psychoanalysis and like figuring out like just people's mental hangups basically.
I do like, of course we'll talk about it more in the homework episode. I do like how every character looks vastly different, so you don't get confused on who you're talking to.
Yeah, very distinct characters.
Yeah, where it's like so many games are like, talk to this person. It's like everybody looks the same. I don't know who to talk to. And it's like, no, you need to talk to the 10-foot tall woman with the gangly arms. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, I know who exactly who that is.
Yeah. No, the neurotic scientist who always wears the trench coat. That's cool. That's a great game.
We'll move on to Taylan's number two pick.
My number two. Now, this is a game that I have not played.
Okay.
But when you brought it up and you were like, hey, I want to talk about aesthetic that's not like grounded in like realism. So I was like kind of scrolling through that Steam, you know, through those Steam wishlist games and stuff like that.
And
I'm like,
coming up with
and
list.
I'm like, these games, like, I'm like, oh, like, oh yeah, that's why it's on my list. That's why it's on my list. That's why it's on my list or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, is called Children of the Sun. Oh, it's like gritty neon.
Okay.
But you basically play as like this young female who's I don't know if her like parents were killed or if she's an orphan.
She was in a cult.
Oh, okay. And so
she escaped the cult. Now she's back for
revenge. Basically,
back Kimmy to Schmidt.
Kimmy Schmidt with a sniper rifle. Okay, yeah, that's exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
But gritty neon is the only best way that I can know how to describe
it's like
it. It's like
hyper
burnt
contrast.
Yeah,
like there are really dark. Like a lot of the environment is like very dark, to the point where it's like that Vanta black paint where it's like cut out almost. You know what I mean? And then there's like these hyper saturated colors for all the different people and stuff like that. But you're like out, a lot of it is like out in the desert, right? Like it's like an abandoned, like a Western ghost town that was abandoned that this cult has taken over and they're like living in, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of like, the gameplay is kind of like Sniper Elite. So you basically, it's like a puzzle game, basically. Okay. You're dropped in like a map.
I know exactly what game you're talking about now.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. So
you
shoot the bullet.
You get one bullet.
You get one bullet, and then you can try to...
I didn't know that was the title of this game.
You get one bullet, and then when it hits something, you can change its direction from that point.
Right.
So basically, you have to situate yourself outside of this little like puzzle arena where all these people are like pacing around or whatever. And you have to structure it so that you can hit every one of them with one bullet without like hitting a wall or something like that. So
it has an old school aesthetic.
It's very pared down. Like it's not, there's not a lot of detail in the environment.
It's minimalist.
Yeah. Which I think is designed to help you like at a glance see, okay, who do I need to be aiming for here? And you can
visual
even shoot straight up in the air and like hit a bird and then come back down to get a better vantage.
Creative puzzle solving.
Yeah. So like, there is
outside the box.
It's, cool. it's really cool. Cool. Like it's not strictly pick one point and then try and get it from there. You can kind of improvise as you go.
Yeah, there's a gnat on the wall. You got to shoot that. Then there's a fly, a little easier to hit. Shoot that.
Yeah.
And then there's a beetle.
Get it.
Now you can see your target.
But I love that like gritty art style. Like if that's an aesthetic, it's like, man, that game looks, it just looks cool.
It looks like it would be an incredible comic book, like the art style.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't know it had such a, I didn't know it had like an actual story to it. I just thought it was like, here's the gameplay for some game concept I came out with.
Yeah. I believe it's Devolver, right? Is the publisher?
Yes.
And the developer? Devolver, like, they make a lot of games, but I would say the vast majority of them hit very hard. Like they did Hotline Miami, which is another game that has like that hyper saturated style that I think is really cool. Not to get off topic, but like that is kind of their like Devolver's wheelhouse is very striking visual design,
right? Yeah,
and I love that about them. Yeah. Like, I think it's a perfect example of how to use your visual design in your gameplay mechanics,
right?
Because it makes it.
Or we're even talking about it, and we haven't played it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that says a lot to
very attention grabbing.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm going to talk about Cuphead.
Cuphead, okay.
Perfect.
I actually thought about putting this one on my list.
This is a great one.
Think so. Granted, like you could make this game without this aesthetic. It's been done 100 times. It's literally Contra or any other side-scrolling shooter game. But the only reason that this game is as popular as it is. Well, I guess there's two reasons. Is one, 75% of it for me is the visual design.
Indeed.
For sure.
Everything about this game is like an old 1920s cartoon style, hand-drawn. Every environment looks very different. All the bosses have these like multiple phases. And it is like hypnotizing to watch this game in motion. Because everything about it literally looks hand-drawn, because it is. But the way that it all plays out at once in a bullet hell game like this is like just instant classic to see it in motion, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think like a lot of games have tried to do stuff like that, have tried to go for like an old timey aesthetic or the hand drawn look or whatever, but none of them have been able to like fully capitalize on it the way that they do here, because even in like shooting the enemies and stuff, like, it's those tiny little details, like the way bullets impact them or the way that they'll like reel back when you beat like the first phase of a boss or whatever,
right.
And like transform. And it's super creative. There's like a boss where you're on like an old, what's the casino? like the gambling thing where you throw the little white balls on the black and red.
I don't know what it's called.
But they spin it to see where they land or whatever. Right. And there's like tons of really interesting stuff like that. There's always tons of stuff happening on screen. But I think they do a great job of differentiating the elements so that you're never like, where am I? Like what? Right. Like I've totally lost my character in this scene.
Yeah.
But it's one of those games like it's actually kind of hard to articulate what makes it such an incredible aesthetic because it just so wholly like encapsulates 1920s cartoon Steamboat style that what else can you really say about it other than it looks exactly like a cartoon in motion that you get to control.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Kingdom Hearts 2, when you went to the Steamboat Willie level, the whole aesthetic changed to like old school cartoony, black and white.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This game is in color.
I remember that level because I loved that aesthetic.
Yeah, I was like, oh, cool, you could do a whole game in this aesthetic and it would still be great. And that's what Cuphead did. And it hits very well. It's surprisingly, at its core, it's a great game. It's got great mechanics. It focuses on timing and understanding what the enemies do. You have to learn. It's like Dark Souls.
That's the other thing, right? Is that like it's actually a very well-made game. Yeah. It's not if it just looked like that, it would still probably get a lot of attention and have more of a cult following. But I think it's like pretty close to a mainstream success at this point because it's very well-tuned.
It's very popular.
Yeah,
It's definitely very
popular. Do you know if there's a second one in the works or anything like that?
I don't know for sure, but I know they made a cartoon.
I did,
I forgot about that.
And that was crazy to think about.
I played a little bit of Cuphead, and it's one that I've always wanted to play. My brother played it with his wife. It's couch co-op. You can pick up another controller and play it.
Oh, I forgot it is co-op.
And they played it, and I'm pretty sure he beat it.
Yeah.
My little brother Dawson. But
I'm always bad at bullet hells. Like I want to be good at them, and I'll play them, and then I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I don't play
these
games.
I've beaten a few bosses from the game, but I've never after that.
Yeah, I've played it at a friend's house, and we beat like the first couple bosses.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was like, this game's great.
Yeah. Yeah, but even then, I mean, it's been, I don't know, four or five years ago since I've played
watched
it. And I
more.
Still remember the bosses and stuff like that. That just kind of sticks with you. Yeah, exactly.
And the enemy, the ultimate enemy is like the devil, right?
Right.
But you play as a coffee cup with arms and legs.
Yeah. A little boy with a coffee cup.
I don't remember if there's a reason for that.
There is some kind of story. Yeah. But like I said, I haven't actually played it. So.
It doesn't have to make sense because it's just great.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it, is like 1920s cartoons also didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So it just fits
it
that
fits
aesthetic.
The, fits that narrative.
That it's like, I don't know, man, the devil wants your soul or something.
You're a cup.
Shoot him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I can do that?
Right.
Yeah.
You have your gun is your hand. You shoot with your finger.
Literally, it's like.
And the sound effects are so satisfying.
Or
they're old school sounding, but it's like.
There's different characters and they have different guns and like different styles, right? And I think that you can get power-ups as
you
well.
Get different characters. I know there's like a player one
he has like
two.
A brother and I think there's like a girl character you can play as well.
Really?
I think that's DLC
it might
though.
Be well, good news, Ryan, it's back to you.
To you.
What's your next game?
I guess I should have started with this one because y'all are talking about Nintendo. I do have a Nintendo game on my list. Zelda Wind Waker.
Obviously.
It's an obvious choice.
Such
really.
A good choice,
it
though.
It is. Yes.
It's actually the first one I thought of.
Like, okay. I feel like in this episode, obvious choices are the best choices because if they're
I'm
that
look for
good,
a backup.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it might be on one of y'all's lists.
I have like a Rolodex of the. I made like 30 games.
You have
30
to.
Games on my list.
Yeah.
And I was like.
30, Jesus.
So I had to start coming up with like criteria of like, well.
Yeah.
Okay, I want it,
it
to be
weird?
An aesthetic that affects the gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Is it weird enough for me?
Mm-hmm.
Does it have digital devils
in it? I need the
most
bizarre-looking game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wind Waker is a Zelda game in the Zelda series. It came after Majora's Mask, and it was in development before Majora's Mask came out. And they were working on it when
I did not know this.
When the GameCube was not out yet, but it was being designed for the GameCube.
Sorry, man.
I'm trying
it came
to
out,
stop it.
It came out in 2003, I think, in America. I think it's 2002 Japan release.
Right.
And then they did like an HD remake on the Wii U, which I think Talon played, and then that's about it and across the entire world.
Because
that's who owns a Wii U.
No joke. I bought a Wii U used with Wind Waker, and that's the only game I ever bought for it. That, I was like, this is my Wind Waker machine. Because literally, that's all I
wanted. It's like $300 for a used Wii U, and I'm like, is it worth it to play Wind Waker? It might be.
They used to be much cheaper. I think I got mine for like $50.
Yeah.
Because some woman bought her son like a Switch and was like, well, he doesn't need the Wii U anymore. And I was like, I need it. Yeah. I need it.
Yeah.
I think it is weird they haven't ported it to the Switch yet.
It's dumb.
It's so easy.
It would make money.
The other thing, though, is like they made a bunch of like mechanical changes to the Wii U version.
I was reading about
those. It's not the same game.
Yeah, there are
a lot of quality of life changes.
Yeah, it's apparently much better.
There's even a whole new ability to make the boat go faster.
Yeah.
Oh, not just that, but like the ocean itself, I think they shrunk the size of it.
Yeah.
So it's literally like, because I remember when that game came out, there was a ton of backlash because around that time, everybody wanted like real, gritty, violent games.
That's what I was.
And they wanted a dark adult Zelda game.
Right.
And when that came out, they were like, oh, you just did the opposite of what we asked you to. Mm-hmm. And there was a bunch of pushback. And so I never played it because I heard such an overwhelming negative reception to it. Mm-hmm. But I remember my friend playing it and he was like, he would literally like put the boat in a direction and get up and go get a snack or something. Because he would be sailing for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that's the kind of stuff that they like trimmed down on in the Wii U version. But when I went and played the Wii U version, because Natalie, my partner, that's her favorite Zelda game is Wind Waker. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I've never played it, so I'll give it a shot. And I was floored. Like, there's so much charm in it. The characters are so different than the other Zelda games. Mm-hmm. Like, it's structurally so fundamentally different from any other Zelda game except maybe Spirit Tracks. And it's just like, it's such an incredible achievement. And looking back at it, the art style has proven everybody wrong, in my opinion, because it has held up so well.
Yeah.
Whereas like games like Gears of War, you go back and look at the old games, it's like you literally just iterated on realism. And I'm really glad that they took that leap, and I don't know in the end if it paid off for them. I imagine no Zelda game has ever like lost Nintendo money.
But it didn't lose them money, but they were not happy with the outcome. I think it was like 4 million copies on release, and then like,
pretty low.
And then, but Ocarina of Time was like 7 million or something like that on release.
Yeah,
I would believe that,
but I could have the numbers totally wrong. But Wind Waker. They made it, and it was a big risk, and they even showed it to a group of people before it was released, like a demo, and people were like, I don't know, and then they like, everything else from then was in secret development, because they were like, we don't want to hear any more crap from you people.
Yeah, they're like, we're not changing it.
Yeah.
Isn't that just like Nintendo?
We never even wanted to show you guys in the first place.
What was the point of showing them if you're so stubborn that it doesn't matter?
Right,
but I'm happy they didn't, but
agreed.
Yeah. The audience, when Nintendo it was released, it was a huge divide. People either loved it or they hated it, which was a very different from the previous Zelda titles. Everyone loved it. So this game, it was divided. Love and hate.
I want to play that game now.
I didn't play it till several years after it came out on the GameCube. I never owned a GameCube, but my cousin had a GameCube, so I played Wind Waker on his GameCube. Played the crap out of it. Then I emulated it on PC. Like,
does it run okay?
It ran okay. Crashed quite a bit, but just save often. And
my Wii U is at a friend's house, and I was like, should I drive like an hour and a half there and back to go get my Wii U? But if I could emulate it, the answer is no. But apparently, the answer is maybe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But the characters are like, the character design in this one, everyone's like really rounded. There's a lot of roundness to this design.
Yeah.
The characters have really huge eyes. Which, when they pitched the idea to the, I guess, like the CEO of Nintendo, whoever it was, he was like, why are their eyes so big? And he wanted an explanation, and they didn't have one, except, well, that's just a design choice. So that's interesting. But
that is interesting.
Everything about it.
I love that conversation went, why eyes so big? And they were like, just because.
Just because.
And he was like, okay. Just let him keep it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's a bad answer, but that's fine.
It's very bright colors, even more so than Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. It's oceany, like a lot of beaches. Obviously, it's a lot of islands.
It's almost cel-shaded.
It is actually cel-shaded.
Like early stages, mm-hmm. where before cel-shaded was like an actual genre mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. style, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was like they were still playing with the edges of what that looked like.
When they went to remaster on the Wii U, they said, oh, this would be super easy because of the art style. Mm-hmm. It spoke for itself. Like, all they needed to do was up the resolution. And they finished it in 6 months of development. Dang. With all those features they added.
Wow.
So, like, the HD remaster was a no-brainer, which is why it's weird they haven't ported it to Switch, because they wouldn't even need to HD remaster it anymore. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll be, like, a Switch 2...
You can up-res it if you want, but I would take it as it is, honestly. Like, just to not have to play with a controller that's this big would be
fantastic. Yeah. Okay. It's my favorite Zelda game.
Wow, really?
Yeah. It just the charm
the
in
door's
it.
Right there, man, if you want
to. Yeah, just a podcast of two.
I love
just kidding.
Breath of the Wild and Tears
I'm
of the
not
Kingdom.
Kidding.
I think they're great.
I'm just surprised specifically that Wind Waker is your favorite.
It's just so good, man.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It is great.
It's the first game that they did, which led to some of the features in Breath of the Wild, where enemies dropped weapons and you could pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So like you could change your fighting strategy and like use different weapons, and then they wanted to do that in Breath of the Wild, but they just took it a step further.
And that type of open world exploration, like mm-hmm. in games like Ocarina of Time, it's still structured in such a way that there are key locations, and those locations have a lot of cool stuff in them.
Mm-hmm.
But the area in between is really just for flavor. Like mm-hmm. there's not a lot in Hyrule Fields other than the giant mm-hmm. plant things that you have to fight.
Yeah.
But in Wind Waker, you could find treasure in mm-hmm. the ocean. Mm-hmm. You could explore all these little different disconnected islands that might just be there just to like let you tinker around and see what you find.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is also very much a blueprint of Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what made it feel so different to me, because it's almost got like a tropical theme, mm-hmm. which is very different than the other Zelda games.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember like one of the temples is like in a volcano, right? Like, mm-hmm. which is, there's a volcano in Ocarina of Time, but it's not an island. It's not like this place off on its own that you travel to and then explore and find lots of interesting characters and stuff like that. But it's that system of leaving and exploring this mm-hmm. like interim space before you get to the mm-hmm. next one is somehow, to me, maybe I'm not doing a great job of separating the two, but it feels fundamentally very different
mm-hmm.
than
Ocarina. Going out to sea and then like seeing an island in the distance gives you such a sense of wonder and mm-hmm. exploration. And like, it was the first game that had like sea travel in that way, where you're on a boat, you have to worry about the wind direction. You can actually change the wind direction later on in the game.
Right.
With like an Ocarina of Time, you have an ocarina. And this game, you have a flute?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you play songs just like an Ocarina of Time.
I think it's a wand.
It is a wand. But you still play music.
You like
orchestrating. Yeah, you're like orchestrating wand. Music. Yeah, okay.
Natalie has a replica of it.
Now, not to get off topic, but we're still on the same game, but like, that game has one of the longest openings for a game. Mm-hmm. It takes too long to get going mm-hmm. before you actually see
it. I actually love the beginning, though. Island where you start out.
I think if I had...
No, not the island where you start out. Where you have to go and you have to save your sister, mm-hmm. and you're stuck on that one island.
Oh.
And it's just like, dude, this is like
mm-hmm.
2 hours of where I could just mm-hmm. do my own thing.
Just let me sail.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Zelda in this one isn't like... it's a little bit of a twist
mm-hmm.
in it.
Yeah.
But you do...
Is like, it that?
It's always a little bit of a twist. Like
at this point.
Sheik is a twist
in
Ocarina of Time. And this one, so usually there's some weird thing with the princess. But I think that twist in Wind Waker is particularly cool
mm-hmm.
and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way that the princess is portrayed in that mm-hmm. one. Like,
yeah, she's not a helpless princess.
Yeah.
She's, you know,
pirate.
A pirate.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Yeah.
I tried to save you.
We'll cut this out for sure.
This time for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great choice, though.
Yeah.
Beautiful
yeah.
game.
Holds up super well.
It does.
Yeah, it's got great combat.
Oh, it definitely does.
And the enemies are all full of character.
I don't think I ever got past the second dungeon in that game. So I need to go back and finish it.
Yeah.
I have a lot of games that I need to go back and finish.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Wii U fixes the quality of life issue where instead of having to orchestrate the wind direction, you just get a new like red flag, not a flag, a sail, red sail, where you, if you just move in the direction, the wind automatically changes, and that's why you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really want to play the Wii U version.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah.
All right. Last one.
This is Thailand's number three.
Crow Country.
Crow Country.
Crow Country.
Have you guys heard of this game?
No, I don't think
you
so.
You guys heard about this? You guys seen about this?
It has like a Resident Evil aesthetic, but it's definitely more indie.
Have we talked about this?
And it's like a horror game.
I have no way.
Yeah.
I don't know what this
you
game
play
is.
As a cop and you go to Crow Country, which is, I think, is like a theme park.
I must
and
have heard like a, about this somewhere
there's
else.
Like a murder mystery or whatever, but of course there's all these like crazy looking weird creatures. It's gritty, but it feels old school. It feels like 90s.
It has two control schemes, right? You can use like the old tank controls of the original Resident Evil games, or you can use a modern control scheme.
I do not know,
okay,
to be honest.
Okay.
Why would you like, choose the old school tank controls?
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's how much of an homage to the Resident Evil games I think it is.
So this Resident Evil-esque?
It is, but like the people almost look like dolls.
Really?
Like, yeah. Like,
okay.
So it's also Silent Hill-esque.
Basically, yeah. Okay. It's basically so they just took them and they were just like,
it's three-dimensional. Is it three-dimensional?
It is. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay. So, and you can move the camera around in the 3D environment, but it's kind of like it's not like top down. It's kind of like at an angle.
Is it isometric like that? Like
it's like Baldur's kind Gate? Of, but kind of not. Like it's closer than Baldur's Gate.
Oh, now I understand more.
I can zoom way in.
That's clear.
Yes, exactly. So, but I love the aesthetic because it reminds me of old school Silent Hill, Resident Evil.
Okay.
It's dark and gritty.
It's a great aesthetic.
Yes.
Now, is it modernized at all, or is it like, does it look like chunky, like polygonal?
Like yes, it looks chunky.
Okay.
But that's why I said the characters are like smooth, so they kind of look like dolls.
Do you know when this game came out? Did you say?
It just. Not too long ago.
Yeah, it's pretty recent.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm pretty sure I thought you had talked about it, but I guess I heard it on another podcast.
But there's a lot of like puzzle solving, just like in the Resident Evil Silent Hill games. It's got this creepy mood. You don't know, like, of course, since you're exploring like an amusement park, it's already perfect, like, setup. You have all these like animatronics that are like creepy or weird looking, and you use them to either solve some puzzles, but you don't know if they're going to like jump out at you, but there's also like all these monsters that are kind of exploring.
Are you gonna get spooked?
Yeah,
who knows? So,
but it's, I don't know, I just like the aesthetic, it's really interesting. I don't have any visuals to show you guys, I'll show you later. But
oh, they're seeing it right now.
Oh, wow, look at those visuals,
you guys.
Whoa, that is cool.
Whoa, did you see them do that?
Stop. Get out of here.
Wow,
yeah.
And I was right. You can change the controls.
Man,
game.
What? What a gorgeous game.
That's right. Yeah.
Thanks for showing us that, Taylor.
Hey, man. Anything.
Wow. What a great clip.
Have fun editing this bit.
I think this is mine to
this
edit.
Is it. Yeah.
Have fun editing this bit.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I am always a little fascinated when, especially indie devs, specifically want to like harken back to
most of the time they're not
what
great.
You would call like an obsolete art style, like
yeah.
the old PlayStation era graphics and stuff like that, because there's always some element of artistic nuance to it where like it's part of it is how it looks, but part of it is how they remember it looking,
right?
And I think that's what makes it really interesting and compelling. It's like you're seeing someone's memory of PlayStation games, and what like it's got like a very personal element to it of like, this is what this person enjoyed about survival games. And this is like an homage to the genre as a whole in a certain time frame. You know what I mean? And I think that is what makes those kinds of games so interesting to like, even if I don't want to play a survival horror game that looks like a PlayStation 1 game, I'll watch somebody else play it. because it just is really interesting to see how all that comes together.
Right.
I just think that's really interesting. So, good pick.
I guess that brings us to Jared's number three.
Number three. I don't know what my number three is. Okay. It's between two different ones. So I'm going to break the rules and I'm just going to split them.
Nope. Pick one right now.
I have to. Okay.
No, you, I mean, you can
do it, man.
So for two very different reasons.
Okay.
One, I feel like I'm like obligated to say, because I don't think a lot of people would consider it best aesthetic, but League of Legends is a game that is completely built around its aesthetic. Mm-hmm. People spend $30 on a skin for a character because it looks a particular way. Mm-hmm. And all the concept art, like every time there's a new event, there's these huge splash images of the new character, like what they look like. And there's like a narrative structure for it. But the big thing is like looking through all the different, like it is a game that it's the one of the most, if not the most popular game ever. It is has the most concurrent players. It has survived over a decade. And all of that is due in large part because their visual design is very on point. It's a game where there's always so much happening. And there are moments where you have like 10 people in one spot all fighting each other. And you need to trigger your abilities at a very specific moment. Because if you're playing with a team in a multiplayer match, you need to be able to coordinate with them. So to make a game where the visual elements all work together in that very specific way where you can still differentiate, I'm not saying it's easy, because it's often not, and it's something that you learn as you go, but they have been very like intentionally designed to be readable, to say like, oh, he's about to use that ability, I'm going to use mine to cancel his. Or whatever, and like the visual layout of the map, because it's very focused on the three lanes and how to navigate the jungles in between them. All of those visual elements have to be very clear and concise, and like how characters move through brush when they're going into camouflage and stuff like that matters a lot. There's just so many little elements that I think League gets hate. And a lot of it is justified because there's a lot about League.
Oh, I hate it. And it's justified.
I can't say anything in defense of League of Legends. But I do think that the amount of attention they put into their visual design is very underappreciated.
It's not something that I would have thought of in quite a long time when talking about aesthetics. But you do make good points.
I think it's critical, and I've played a lot of MOBAs that don't know how to do that very well.
Yeah.
And it just makes them a lot less fun to play, but it also makes them a lot less knowable. Mm-hmm. And games like that have to be knowable on a very deep mechanical level.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate the effort that they put in there. And I love that they come out with new skins all the time. And, you know, you have your like two or three characters that you really like. And like 90% of the time they come out with a skin for the characters that I'm playing, I'm going to buy it because I love the way that it looks.
Yeah.
And that's often like a weird micro problem I have when I'm playing League. I'm like, what skin do I pick? I don't know. Like I have like 10 skins.
Are you still playing League?
I play it pretty regularly.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I'm still bad at it. But is it anyone other than Faker ever actually good at League of Legends?
Well, I don't know.
What's your split now? Is that your split? What's your split?
Oh, I don't do splits.
God, I hate you.
Can you do the splits? Is what he's asking.
Oh, I mean, my split. You mean KDA? Is that what you're talking about?
No, he's talking about your other game.
You said you had two games. You're split them up.
Oh, we're not talking about League anymore. Okay. That's fine, I guess.
Well, I'll add, people have been trying to get me to play League, and I tried it. And
people or just me?
You know, those all people.
People are just me leaving voicemails of me sobbing on your phone. Mm-hmm. Just one game, Ryan.
Come on. You're not the only one who's tried to get me to play League. And I did play League for quite a bit. And one of my experiences was I was very sick, very, very sick, playing League.
Off to an awesome start.
And just wanted to play a video game and relax.
Oh, you made a huge mistake.
Yeah. And whoo, boy, did I get
claimed
out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was doing something that I wasn't supposed to be doing, but I had no idea because my experience was also low. So I just didn't know how to strategize in that game yet. But man, they do not like newcomers.
So the community by default, League mutes the chat for if you like open an account on League by default, your chat will be muted. You will not see comments from anybody, and
that's sad.
Here's a pro tip.
I would probably be playing.
I mean, it is League. Sad, but also I'm gonna get on Discord and I'm gonna talk to my friends.
Yeah.
When I'm playing with them.
But
I'm not gonna if you're typing, hey, they're coming down mid lane, you're dead already. Mm-hmm. You don't have time to type that. Mm-hmm. You have to say like, oh, mid lane, there's three.
Yeah. Or whatever. I mean, if you're playing League, you just want to ping in the mid lane.
Pinging, yes, but a lot, but that has also kind of evolved its own form of flaming where if you're not going where they think you should, they'll just ping where you should be like 100,000 times.
Yes.
You can mute that too. Okay. So
fine.
My advice.
So just pretend they don't exist.
My real advice for League, if anyone's actually interested in playing League after watching the TV show that was absolutely incredible,
indeed,
you should play against bots, and you should probably play with your friends, and you should just have a good time.
The bot meta is so different though from
bots don't jungle, which is a specific style of play that you typically have one jungler on your team. So if you want to learn how to jungle, you can't do that. You can practice with bots, but you're not going to have a bot jungler countering you. So you're not going to learn counterplay with that, which is a huge, like, it just kind of kneecaps how useful playing against bots is. But once you're comfortable with it's a game about efficiency. So once you're comfortable, like, getting a routine down of what you do each game with your character and you know how they work, then you can go into low elo stuff. I almost never play ranked. I just play draft, which is like, it just puts a bunch of people together. It still rates you based on elo, but you're not moving up a rank. You're not having to deal with any of that stuff.
No.
So just play bots. Just have fun. My split is the new HD remake of Persona 3.
Huh.
I've talked about the Persona games to death, but I will say Persona 3, even the original, its aesthetic is so much cooler than 4 and 5. Leagues beyond. Like, there's no comparison for me if you're asking about the aesthetic of the Persona games. 3 is easily, far and away, the best. Already before they made the HD remake.
It's fine, I disagree.
It's very, like, dark and gloomy. There's, like, a lot of, like, cold hues in the game. Of like blue is, like, a deep blue is kind of, like, the overarching color palette for that game. When you like summon your persona, it's different for every Persona game. In this one, you have an evoker, which is just, it looks like a pistol and you just shoot yourself in the head. And that's how you like, you basically knock your consciousness out of your head so that the persona can like embody you. And that's easily the coolest way that you've ever summoned a persona in the Persona games.
I agree about that.
So the big thing for me is the modernization of it. Like, I already loved it, but seeing Natalie play it, like, just sitting on the couch, passively taking it in, I can't even really put into words how cool that game looks. And it's everything. It's, like, all the spell effects. It's the character design. It's, like, the way they've actually styled everything. It's the headquarters that you have. I love the look of the dungeon that you're moving through. Like, weapon attacks.
For the remake.
Spells. For the remake. Okay, all of it. Okay. Looks so good. Yeah, it's just, it like, really good. I feel like they've taken everything about the way the game looked and just turned it to 11.
Yeah.
Like, I it just looks awesome. I mean, I don't know how else to say, like, it's probably a very subjective thing of just, like, it just hits exactly the aesthetic I personally want. But if anybody hasn't seen what that game looks like, just go watch the trailer. Like, it looks unreal. And seeing it in motion when you're playing it, like, it's one of those games where, like, when you watch somebody else play it, you're like, man, that looks awesome. But when you're controlling it, it's the same way of Cuphead. It's like, I thought I was watching a cartoon, but I'm, like, controlling it. And it just feels so weird that something that looks this good is, like, happening in real time. Right. It's not, like, a scripted thing.
Yeah.
So I just think it looks amazing.
Is it on Game Pass?
It is.
Is it?
It's on Game Pass, and if you have a subscription to Game Pass, you can go into like the rewards thing where you can claim rewards. There's a $35 DLC pack for it for free. that you just get for having Game Pass.
Wow.
And it's like the whole Aegis story arc.
Okay.
With that character. Cool. It's like all of that stuff.
Sweet.
And you just get it for free.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks incredible.
Yeah. It's very, very good. I love that game.
Cool.
Ryan?
What's your last one, bud?
My last one is Hollow Knight.
Ah, good choice.
It is.
It was also on my list.
At its core, it's a great game. It's got great combat.
Mm-hmm. I
disagree.
Do you? I do.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Wait.
Go ahead.
Okay.
It's so funny. Like, that game, I heard, for years, I heard nothing but, like, overwhelming praise for that game. Yeah. Everyone loved it. And then, like, within the last 6 months, there's, like, I've seen, like, YouTube videos and people online being like, am I the only person who does not like this game?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised.
Taylan's the only one I've heard someone speak negatively.
I watched a whole YouTube video about someone who was just like, this is why I don't like this game.
But that's not what we're here for.
Yeah, that's
what we're here to talk about.
The aesthetic immediately reminds me of Bloodborne, if it were a cartoon, but everyone's a bug.
Yeah.
So everyone has like, all the characters, even the enemies are like exoskeleton esque, like their armor is their skin type dudes. It has a lot of boss fights. It is side scroller. Mm-hmm. You move left and right, you move up and down. The map is very large and a bit confusing.
It's like a Metroidvania, right?
Did you
say that? Okay.
I mean, no. But yeah, it is a Metroidvania type style, but you have a sword instead of a gun. Like in Cuphead, you have a gun.
That's why it's worse, yeah.
Your sword is... that's why it's better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You do have spells that you can get. You use, like, this currency, like souls, that you use to cast abilities, but you get that later on. The first thing you can do with your souls that you gather is, like, you can heal yourself. Mm-hmm. And you gather those by, like, hitting enemies. And then there's, like, a weapon later on you get that, like, you hit enemies with, but it does no damage, but you gather resources more quickly, so you're able to cast stuff. Every boss is very unique looking and interesting. All the characters, the characters are also like Bloodborne or like Souls like where they have these like weird dialogues about the lore, like not much about themselves. And you can read item descriptions to learn more about the lore, just like a Souls game. Not really sure what's going on with the story because it's a bit vague, like
it is
like a Souls game. It's kind of complex story.
I'm sure somebody on YouTube would love to spend an hour telling you all about it.
I'm mostly just like looking at the game. It's dark, a lot of like blacks and whites, but very like dark blues.
Yeah.
It has very, very good lighting, and it does a very good job with like depth of like the background, where it has layers to the background.
Yes.
That, and as the camera moves, the angle of the camera moves with the background to really give this like depth of like you're in this huge underground cavernous area. While it's like a lot of side scrollers feel tight, like you're in like you're crawling almost.
Right. Yeah.
This one feels like open and alive.
Right.
But it's cartoony, but
yeah,
not like old school, like Cuphead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This game came out in what, 2017, I think.
So. Yeah.
It's very like a lot of like very sharp lines, like on the characters, like not like, it doesn't have a lot of bold lines.
It has a lot of curves that meet at a point.
Yes.
Like meet to a sharp angle.
Yeah. I just mean like the outline of the characters, like a lot of like Cuphead has like bold lining or bolder lining. And I think it has a really cool, doesn't like, if I'm remembering correctly, Hollow Knight has like all the characters have like a black outline around them, like they've been drawn. Anyway, my point being, I think it does a really good job with contrast in a game that is almost black and white.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks really cool in motion. I have not played a ton of Hollow Knight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But aesthetically, I definitely see what you're talking about because it's got a really cool, like, melding of that Dark Souls aesthetic, but in a basically a 2D environment.
Yeah.
This is impressive in its own way.
Yeah.
It is good. It's got great layers. Like, there's always like some particle effect that's like in the foreground, and there's always something in the background, and then of course the actual playing ground that you're on. It does great visual cues for that, mm-hmm. which is nice. I like that a
lot. But there's something about the combat that you do not like? Because yeah, you've got like a Hollow Knight figure up on your shelf.
Yeah, why do you have a Hollow Knight figure if you hate Hollow Knight?
I don't hate Hollow Knight.
And wish that you'd never played it.
I think Silk Song will fix all the issues that I had with Hollow Knight. You can't grab ledges, which is annoying. I do think the movement and the mobility in that game could be a lot better.
Okay, great. Anyway, that's it. Check out Rollerdrome.
Yes, check out Rollerdrome, please.
That game is super cool.
All right, Ryan, go quick.
Thanks for joining us. This has been our episode about art direction or aesthetic, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But we'd like to thank Sam Webster for the use of his music in our intro and outro.
Yeah, we're huge fans of your music.
Check us out on YouTube, where you can see clips, game clips that we're adding it. Check us out anywhere you can find podcasts. We are there. Look for Did I Save.
And if you have a game with a cool aesthetic that we should check out, let us know.
There's so many that it's hard to do this list. So we definitely want to hear what people's takes are, because art is subjective. So.
Indeed.
So true. That is pretty much it. Did I miss anything?
No,
I don't think so. I think it's all right. We're on Blue Sky and TikTok at Did I Save Podcast.
Thanks for joining us, and don't forget to what was it? Can't remember.
To save. Better to save. Okay. Don't forget to save.